Welcome to Vermont Edition, and I'm Bob Kinzel. There's a lot of interest at the State House this year to look at the way that governors and most other statewide candidates are elected in Vermont. Currently, under the Vermont Constitution, if no candidate receives a majority of votes, lawmakers elect the next governor on the first day of the session. It's something that happened this year. The two main contenders for governor this year view this issue quite differently. Democrat Peter Shumlin says the election needs to be decided on Election Day, but Republican Scott Milne thinks there's a role for lawmakers to play if no candidate gets at least 50% of the vote.
If we enter an atmosphere in Vermont's democracy where you have to sort of run two campaigns, the first one to try to get 50%, and the second one to try to convince folks that the person who gets the most votes shouldn't win, I think that's really dangerous precedent.
You know, I just came from a lunch at one of the busier restaurants in Vermont. I had 15 people walk up to me and tell me I better stay in or they're going to be disappointed. They hope I'll stay in. They need me to stay in. Vermont needs me to stay in.
Should lawmakers consider a constitutional amendment to change the current system? And if so, how should it be changed? These are some of the questions we have for our guest today, two of the three senators from Washington County. We have Bill Doyle, who's a Republican, and Anthony Polina, who's a Democrat and a progressive. Great to have you both here. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you for the invite.
Appreciate it.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What do you think about the current system? Is it fine? Or should it be changed? And if you think it should be changed, how would you like to see it changed? Some people think a runoff would be a good idea several weeks after Election Day if no candidate receives a majority of votes. Some people think that the person who gets the most votes, the plurality, should win. What are your thoughts? Does it need to be changed? Or is it fine just the way it is? 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. But better yet, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Senator Doyle, when you're not at the State House during the session, you're a professor of Vermont history at Johnson State College. So explain to us, why was this provision in the Vermont Constitution to start with, that if no candidate got a majority of votes, that the election would then go to the legislature?
Well, the pre-Civil War period in our state was dominated by discussions about slavery, and that grew up, different parties grew up having to do with four or five parties relating to the slavery issue. So that meant for eight or nine times in a period of 20 years, you might have six or seven, the legislature would decide. So I think that's probably the origin of having it done that way. And I think there are those who would say that majority is more convincing than a plurality, and there are many people who advocate that. But so that's another reason why majority has been mentioned. And although I will say that every statewide election in Vermont is, except for the governor and the lieutenant governor of the treasurer, is by plurality. And by a congressional delegation is by plurality.
And throughout most of the 19th century, governors were serving a one-year term, right?
That's correct. And speaking of that, the unicameral House of Representatives in, I think it was 1835, with 65 ballots, couldn't come to any conclusion. That sort of made some Vermonters uncomfortable. And so that helped advocate the creation of the Senate, which just about happened the same year.
That's really remarkable to have more than 60 ballots, and it was an incumbent governor at the time.
It was an incumbent governor.
Who could not get enough votes to get elected in the legislature. It's
not
a remarkable student.
Not exactly a vote of great confidence in the incumbent.
So, Senator Polina, as you look at the system as it exists today, do you think there's some problems with it?
Well, I look at it. Short answer is yes. I think that it is a problem. And I would hearken back to what Senator Doyle just said, where 100 years ago, we had in Vermont a number of political parties that were able to gain strength and play a significant role in statewide campaigns. And I think now we've in a place, we're in that place again where there are a number of strong political parties in the state of Vermont. There's often more than two strong candidates in a race for governor or lieutenant governor. So it's not going to be uncommon for us to have an election result that has no one getting 50% of the vote. And that means the race then goes to the legislature to make that decision. I think it's really – first of all, I think two things. One is that we're lucky to have such a strong democracy and a strong third party and other significantly strong parties that shows that our democracy is alive and well and the debates are strong ones. I think that's really important. I think the other thing that's important is to remember that it really should be citizens who elect the governor. I want to see the governor and the lieutenant governor elected by the majority of the citizens of the state of Vermont, not by legislators. So I think it's important that we get legislators out of the business of choosing the governor and lieutenant governor and make sure that the votes of citizens that really count. We complain sometimes these days that people don't feel as if their votes count. And this is just another example of where the votes of citizens are less important if, in fact, the election's going to end up being decided by the legislature.
Just on Anthony's point, I say that the Vermont Constitution says that the three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial, are separate but equal. So it's hard for me to see why, how, if they are, why should the legislature be involved in the selection of a governor? And as Anthony said, and many of us said, the people should be electing the governor, not a particular, relatively small group of people.
Yeah, we're going to end up with a situation that we often criticize other nations for, particularly where a small group of people decide who the leadership is. And in this case, we have a relatively small group of people happen to be legislators, you know, so-called insiders who are choosing who the next leader of the state should be. And it just doesn't make sense to me that in a vibrant democracy we would allow us to be put in that position.
And if one legislature were very predominantly one party or another, that might have to do with the selection process.
And Senator Polina, we also saw this year there was a group that wanted Scott Milne to win. They actually took out $30,000 in TV ads. And so you had this campaign going on between Election Day and the first day of the session. Is that a concern to you as well?
Well, it's a concern. And, well, let me just say it was interesting because I think I got more phone calls about who I should vote for governor from constituents than I've got from about any other issue that I've dealt with in the legislature over the last 5 years or so. And I think it's not healthy to have people spending a lot of money trying to convince legislators who to vote for governor. It's like, as Governor Shumlin mentioned in your recorded piece, that it's another campaign within a campaign. And I also found that people were coming up with some fairly, I don't know whether convoluted is the right word, but all kinds of reasons why I should vote for one candidate or another. And people who thought it was okay for the second place vote getter to become the governor. And that's something that I really don't believe in. I really believe that in an election, the person who gets the most votes wins. And that it should be as clear as that, which I think is what the legislature ends up doing anyway. But we have to go through this whole process to make that happen. I would rather see the votes of citizens determine who the top vote getter is and let that person become the governor.
And that more or less explains why I think the top vote getter should win.
And we're going to discuss.
I might say that any change couldn't take place until 2018. And there's a very rigorous process for amending the U.S. Constitution, the Vermont Constitution.
So to start off with that process, Senator Doyle, it has to pass the Senate by 2/3, so that would be 20 votes. That's not an easy thing to do.
Very difficult. And on top of that, one legislature has to approve, then the succeeding legislature has to approve, and then it's put to a popular vote. So it's probably the most difficult constitution to amend in the nation.
Today in the program, we are looking at the Vermont Constitution and the provision that has the legislature elect the governor and several other statewide office holders if no candidate receives a majority of the votes. What are your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Maybe you think the current system is just fine. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you think it really needs to be changed. We also would like to hear your thoughts on that and how you'd like to change it. 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Rick in South Burlington. Hi, Rick. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. And I have a comment and then a question. I'd like to commend both Bill and Anthony for proposing that this should be moved to be decided by the people. But I'd like to go on and point out that both of your proposals lock in a big problem, because they lock in a threshold, it may vary, but for plurality voting. And that forces a voter, from looking at it from the point of view of what's best for all you Vermont citizens, to game their vote. If you have multiple candidates and you have a first choice who is not one of the two leading candidates, if you vote for your first choice, you may well help to elect your worst choice. And my question is, given that, and given the interest that all of us have in strengthening our state political system, is it really true that do you get a stronger political system, let's phrase it this way, if you have whomever we elect, regardless of ideology, backed at the end of the election by a full majority or more than 50% of all Vermonters, versus a plurality system where with less than a full majority we lock in this problem of gaining the vote? Which approach will strengthen the political system and set an example nationally to serve Vermont voters first?
Well, I think we have a strong political system as it is now. We elect our congressional delegation by popular vote, and the only people we don't vote statewide by popular top vote getter is the governor, lieutenant governor, and the treasurer. So I would submit the present system electing our members of Congress has never been challenged and has served us well. So what's the difference between voting for members of Congress and for voting for a governor?
So it's a good chance for us to look at your proposal, Senator Doyle. Basically, if I understand your amendment, you would say plurality wins, no threshold, no 40%, no 50%. Whoever gets the most votes wins, period. Is that right?
It is, but it's not as though I didn't think about the 40% proposal and others. But what really came down to me forcefully was in checking with the Secretary of State, finding out it would cost $300,000 to conduct a runoff, and then that runoff might be challenged. You wouldn't know by Christmas until the first run, but if that were challenged, we wouldn't know until past the inaugural address by a governor, if we had one by that time. So then I think the other compelling reason is as the Secretary of State indicated, that this would be a diminution of the participation of people who are of veterans, people who are overseas, and they shouldn't be treated. If we did it that way, they would be almost sort of second-class voters in many cases, because many couldn't vote under the runoff system.
So, are you comfortable with a possible scenario? Let's say in 2016, Governor Shumlin decides to seek re-election. There happens to be a strong Republican candidate. The progressives are talking about running a strong candidate. It's possible that the winning candidate might get 37% of the vote. Is that okay?
Well, first of all, we'd be talking about 2018. I think that's the earliest we could have the new constitutional amendment in effect.
But in a scenario like that, it would be possible with three or four strong candidates that the winning candidate could get below 40% of the vote. Do you think that that has an effect on our democracy in any way?
Not really. I just recently saw a research study that said an analysis of almost 2,000 gubernatorial elections conducted since 1900 finds the rate of governors being elected without support of a majority far at the highest level in 2010. So I think the movement for a plurality is growing, not lessening. And those seems to be working in those states.
Let's talk to Peggy in Craftsbury. Hi, Peggy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I absolutely support the voters' choices. I think that is, should be the final word. And I worry that in the future, if this is not set in the Constitution or in the laws, that future candidates for governor might like to run on a premise that says, if I win, I will vote for, you know, to the legislature, if they win a seat in the legislature, that they would not promise to vote for the candidate who gets the most votes. In other words, the voters' choices would once again be thwarted.
So, Peggy, do you think that the winning candidate should get at least 50% of the vote, or is a plurality okay?
Plurality is fine with me. That's what we do with the rest of the people on the ballot.
And I'd say, Peggy, you would know that night of the election what the plurality would be. You wouldn't. That would be the end of it. You'd know that night, election night, maybe by midnight, who actually got the most votes.
Yeah.
All right, Peggy, thanks very much for your phone call. Today we are looking at some proposed constitutional amendments to change the way that governors are elected in Vermont. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at several proposed constitutional amendments to change the way that the governor and other statewide office holders are elected in Vermont. With us today, Anthony Polina, who is a Democrat and progressive from Washington County, and also Bill Doyle, also from Washington County. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. So, Senator Polina, we've heard from Senator Doyle that he thinks plurality is the way to go. He says it's used in congressional elections, for that matter. Why not use it at the state level? How would you like to see things changed?
I would like to see us have an election where a majority of the voters choose the winner. So I would prefer us to go over 50%. And I think we can do that through the use of some kind of runoff. We propose in our amendment that there be a runoff, if need be, between the two top vote getters. I also believe that we could we've had an experiment with and could move towards the use of instant runoff voting to allow us to see who the winner is the night of the election, if that's what people think is preferable. I think plurality may be where we end up because it is what we use in other elections. I think, to me, the message to listeners and other folks around the state of Vermont is that we're having this discussion in the Senate Government Operations Committee because there's a growing consensus that we need to do something to change the system so that the voices of voters are the ones that really elect the leadership. And I think that we're open to having a full discussion. Some want to see plurality. Some want to see majority. Some want to see instant runoff voting. There's a variety of ways to do it. But I think I would argue at least that there's a growing consensus that the current way of doing it is not the best way to do it. And I think that we need to look at alternatives. And like I said, one of the things I would mention is that what we're finding in some early testimony we've taken is that there may be some logistical issues with a runoff. As Senator Doyle mentioned or alluded to a little while ago, you need a certain amount of time to hold a runoff, and you may end up, you know, going into December, mid-December, late December. You don't really want to see that happen unless, you want to know as soon as possible what the outcome is going to be. So there are some logistical challenges with a runoff, but I still think it would be the best way to go. I think instant runoff voting is another way to go. Plurality is not something that I would be opposed to. I want us to come together around a proposal that the majority of Vermonters, including legislators, could support.
On the runoff issue, Bob, I would say that a runoff would greatly increase the impact of money, especially the darker outside money that has become its maximum traction and won on many races recently throughout the nation. So money could play a major role in that process.
There's also the question of whether or not when you have a runoff, do more people participate or do people lose interest after the general election and maybe less people participate? I don't know the answer to these questions, and this is the kind of thing we're trying to figure out. But again, I think we have decided, at least a lot of us, that we need to make a change. And that's why these kinds of discussions are important with your listeners and others around the state.
And Anthony makes a good point that the turnout may be lower, and then the Secretary of State believes it could be significantly lower, and those people who vote will be different than those who voted previously.
And we got this email from Dean Corin, who was the Democratic and Progressive candidate for lieutenant governor this year, and he's got a lot of problems with the runoff idea, Senator Pelina. He thinks it's very undemocratic. Fewer people will be voting in a December runoff. That's been the history of the few states that do have runoffs. He's also concerned about money, and he thinks that in what he referred to as this post-Americans United Supreme Court decision, the Citizens United case, that, wow, if there's a runoff election and we've got 3 or 4 weeks for an election after November in Vermont, money is just going to pour into this state to try to influence voters.
Well, and in some ways, we saw a smaller version of that with money pouring in through the soft money, particularly to try to convince legislators to vote a certain way in January. So, I mean, I wouldn't argue with that. What I would say is like that where the point of this conversation is for us to try to come together around a proposal that will work for all of us. I think he makes some good points. I think he would probably be a supporter of instant runoff voting, which would allow us to make the same kind of decision on election night as well. So I think there's a lot of moving pieces in this conversation right now, but the bottom line is that we need to have a system where citizens make the decision. And I think we also do need to make the decision before January. You know, I think if in fact someone who's not particular, let's say the second place vote getter is elected by the legislature for some reason in January, is that person prepared to put together a budget and begin to run state government? It just doesn't seem to make sense to be waiting until, you know, early to mid-January to make a decision as to who's governor.
Just an aside to add to what Anthony has said, there's only two states in the country that have a two-year term for governor. So already you're chewing up another month or month and a half in terms of electing someone. At the very time, we've only got a two-year term, which makes it a little bit more difficult to compete in a world economy.
And just this year, it sort of became very clear to a lot of people because of the Republicans' decision to stay in the race. I mean, I was involved in a race in 2002 where no one – in fact, in both lieutenant governor and governor's races in that year, nobody got a majority of the votes. And the legislature basically went for the person who got the most votes. So you could argue that, well, it's kind of worked smoothly in recent years, you know, because people have sort of not debated it that strongly. But it shows you this year what could happen if someone decides to stay in the race and pump money in and create more controversy that pressures the legislature to act in one way or another.
Let's go back to our listeners and talk to Amy in Bellows Falls. Hi, Amy. What's on your mind today?
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. I'm a firm believer in the individual who gets the most votes is the one who wins. And the last time we had a small group of people decide who had won, five people foisted the Bush-Cheney debacle off on this country. And the tsunami of Republican corruption that unleashed is what's battering the nation now. Governor Shumlin did not win by a handful of votes. He won by more than 2,000 votes. And I was appalled to find people spending the money that they did to convince people, just the ordinary people like myself, to call our representatives and tell them to vote for the man who didn't win. This isn't democracy.
So, and Amy, Amy, do you think the Senator Doyle's idea of having a plurality winner, whoever gets the most votes, even if it's less than a majority, do you think that's a good idea?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how the legislature deals with this. And Senator Pelina mentioned it's a kind of a work in progress right now. So I'm sure if anyone has some thoughts about this, that the members of the Senate Government Operations Committee would enjoy hearing from you. And we're going to turn to Marvin in Berlin. Hey, Marvin, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I just want to say that I don't agree with the last caller or with Senator Doyle. I think you're not just addressing the problem of making so that legislators aren't the ones who decide. When you have people elected with fewer than 50% of the votes, and somebody who's getting 40.5% of the vote would become governor, you're inevitably going to end up with what I call strategic voting, where people are going to wonder if their candidate really is going to be, if they vote for a third party candidate, will that undermine their second choice? So in other words, a libertarian like Dan Feliciano may have gotten many more votes if people hadn't been doing strategic voting. And the Progressive Party, they may as well pack it in. They're never going to elect a candidate with the existing system. So I think we really need to have a system where 50% of the people decide an election. There needs to be either a regular runoff or an instant runoff. And I have one more comment on the instant runoff thing. You know, it got a bad reputation in Burlington when they elected a governor who quickly became unpopular due to the scandal there. But the process worked. If you didn't like your candidate, you know, I'm sorry about that, you know, that there was a hidden scandal people found out about later. But instant runoff voting worked. And if people don't like instant runoff voting, we should have a delayed runoff. Senators Doyle concern about the military not being able to vote. This is 2015. We have ways to get the vote here pretty fast.
Well, so, I just would want to comment that we have many members of Congress who didn't get the 50% vote. Bob Stafford, Patrick Leahy, and I think both of those are extremely legitimate senators, and no one could ever question as to whether they have the confidence of the people to serve.
But I would just mention that Marvin makes a good point that instant runoff voting as a procedure did work very well in Burlington. And also the last two callers just show us the diversion of the variety of opinions that we're dealing with in committee, because they're both making, you know, pretty valid points and doing it strongly.
And even instant runoff voting in Burlington was a pretty controversial process.
Yes.
Some people thought it worked real well, and some people had some serious problems with it. And as Marvin mentioned, voters there decided to do away with it. Let's turn to Ken in Montpelier. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Senator Doyle, I wanted to ask you looking at this situation through the context of our, you know, balance of powers relationship between being a democracy and being a republic. I mean, I don't know. To me, this was just a glaring issue in all of this. Like, wow, what would it be for the legislature to choose the governor over the vote of the people? And what does that say about our tradition of direct democracy?
And well, I don't think the legislature should have the final word. I think the people should have the final word. And it's people who have elected Bob Stafford and Patrick Leahy, who got maybe 46%, and no one ever claims that they truly don't represent the state of Vermont.
Ken, what do you think about the current system?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think this has revealed a flaw that we're addressing. I like the proposal of the plurality. I think that makes good logical sense.
All right, Ken, thanks very much for your phone call. Senator Polino, you said a couple of moments ago that you think there's kind of a fair amount of interest building at the State House to address this issue this year. Do you think we're going to see something come to the Senate floor by the middle of May?
Interesting question. If I had a bet, I would say yes. You know, I think the process is going to be a little long and complicated to decide what to bring to the Senate floor, but from the early discussions that we've had, I see a lot of interest building to make some kind of change. And we started taking testimony just the other day. Senator Doyle was there. Paul Gillies, a local attorney, was there. And Peter Teachout from Vermont Law School was there, and a number of others. There are a number of citizen groups that are interested in seeing some changes made. So I think maybe because of what happened in the last election, there's been a mini groundswell of interest in this issue, and I do think that there's growing support for some kind of change. And frankly, as a legislator, you know, I look forward to that change. I would like to see these elections, first of all, decided by citizens. I think it's citizens' votes that really matter. And I would like the decision to be made as quickly as possible, you know, the night of the election or very soon after. But I still believe that we should strive to have a majority make that decision.
Yeah, and I would say that it's the people who should elect the governor, not the legislature. That's pretty fundamental. And we're right now at the committee stage where it's being discussed. And just no proposal has to come out this year. It could wait until next year and still be alive.
So, Senator Pelina, you support at this point a runoff process, but would it be fair to say that because of some of the concerns that are being raised by the Secretary of State, you're not so sure this runoff process is going to work out quite the way that you thought it would?
Yeah, we have to make sure that it would work, and meaning work in a procedural way, make sure that there's enough time to make it happen. I think we need to also consider what people are saying about whether it would be meaning more money in those elections or less participation. I think all of those issues and questions need to be vetted. But I prefer to have the runoff, yes. But I ultimately prefer to have a system that works and allows citizens' voices to make the decision. And so I'm willing to go with whatever will bring us to that conclusion.
We got this email from Robert, who said, I have no problem with the legislature making the final decision, but he does have a problem with the idea of a closed vote, and he would like to have that vote out in the open as an open roll call vote. Senator Doyle, what do you think about that?
I support an open vote. I think that's the best way of going, and I think that's consistent with letting people know how you do vote, that people have the right to know how you vote.
I mean, when you vote, when the legislature votes on judges, for instance, you do that in a closed ballot vote.
That's correct.
And should that be open?
Well, I don't see how the Vermont would be adversely affected with an open vote.
Senator Pelina, what do you think about open votes and how people – you said so many people were in touch with you about who you were going to vote for. There are people who would say – who won Washington County? That's the person that you should vote for. What about having that vote be open? What do you think about that?
You know, Bob, I don't have a strong feeling either way. I mean, most all the votes we take in the Senate, we take in the open, and we don't do secret votes on any of the issues that we vote on, and some of those issues are pretty tough. And what I told the constituents was that nobody was running to be governor of Washington County. There were three people in this race, there were more than three, but there were three major candidates who were running to be governor of Vermont. And my position is that the person who got the most votes throughout the state of Vermont was the winner of the race. So I don't see any reason to, you know, to try to hide that decision or that determination. But so to me, it didn't matter too much whether the vote was open or closed, although the tradition in the Senate is, you know, we take our votes in public.
And we were also talking about establishing in some of the amendments having a threshold, be it 45% or 40%. Would you consider something like 40 or 45%? And if that threshold isn't achieved, then you'd throw it to the legislature at that point?
I would rather not throw it to the legislature. But the proposal that I'm sticking with at this point is if nobody gets 45% of the vote, above 45% of the vote, there would be a runoff. I think we need to go as far as possible to make sure that a majority of citizens elect the next governor and lieutenant governor.
And I would just say the Secretary of State has indicated that if it's lowered to 40%, it means that 60% chose someone else. If it's lowered to 45%, it means that 55% chose someone else. That's the information I've gotten from the Office of Secretary of State.
Couldn't that same argument be used for a plurality winner, that if somebody did win with 40% of the vote and they were automatically the winner, that 60% of the voters didn't support them?
Yeah, I'm sure you could. I'm just quoting what the Secretary of State has said.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion. We'll be following this in the Senate Government Operations Committee. Many thanks to our guest today, Senator Bill Doyle and Senator Anthony Pelina. We appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you for the invite.
Coming up next, I'll talk with Senator Patrick Leahy about his trip to Cuba last weekend. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. This past weekend, Senator Patrick Leahy led a special congressional delegation to Cuba. It's part of an effort to normalize relations between the two countries, relations that were severed in 1961 when Fidel Castro came to power. Senator Leahy joins us now to talk about his weekend visit and the overall plan to restore full diplomatic relations between the United States and Cuba. Senator Leahy, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back.
So, Senator, this was the first congressional delegation visit since President Obama last month announced his intentions of ending the current restrictions between the United States and Cuba. What was the basic goal of this trip?
We wanted to go down and talk to so many of the key players. Obviously, the foreign minister, spent hours with him, but people like Cardinal Ortega. And we talked about the things that have now become public, but we were doing secret meetings back and forth in New York, in Canada. Cardinal Ortega helped arrange letters to the Pope. The Pope talked to President Obama and sent letters back to President Obama and President Castro via the Cardinal. He delivered them to the presidents. I mean, in a way, we could sit back and just relax and talk about what happened. At the time it was happening, it was all very tense because we did not know what the final result would be.
I think a lot of people would be very surprised to hear about these secret meetings. At what point in the whole process did you realize, hey, this actually might happen?
There were all these different obstacles from the people we were, Cubans we had in prison, to one of our spies they had in prison. And it seemed almost insurmountable. And I said, well, why try to solve every one of them? Let's see if we can begin normalization. The rest will fall in line. I met a couple different times with Raul Castro. I found him a lot sounding anyway, a lot more flexible than his brother Fidel Castro did when I met with him. And it suddenly all started coming together. I think the Pope was very helpful. Raul Castro said something very interesting to me just before the last presidential election. He said, do you think President Obama will be reelected? I said, yes, I do. He said, well, I hope so, because maybe we can work something with him. He seems like a good man. I hope he is reelected. But he said, I'll be sure not to say that publicly, because then he'd never be reelected. And I'm not so sure. I think the American public, certainly the emails I'm getting, the calls I'm getting in my office, are overwhelmingly in favor of improving our relations with Cuba.
Well, Senator, it's been over 50 years since the United States and Cuba broke off diplomatic relations. Why do you think it's taken so long to get to this space?
I don't think anybody had the courage to actually step forward. It's a lot easier to say no than to say yes. We've had people who are, we might upset a voting bloc in Florida, the number of other things. It's easier to say no. Anti-communist feeling in this country, why would you do something with the communists? I mean, just like it actually took a lot of bravery for Richard Nixon to go to China. Some thought it was the third rail of American politics, if you, which you want, to get elected or to do the right thing with Cuba. Well, I found that I could be helpful in this because in Vermont, we did not have an electorate that was strongly one way or the other. And I think I'd built enough of a reputation in Vermont that people knew I would try to do the right thing, as I have with the ban on landmines and other issues. And we also had a president who early on made up his mind, I want to reopen relations with Cuba. Now, as soon as President Obama announces, he started getting a very positive reaction from Central America and Latin America, that before they kind of look at the United States, they considered us more of a out-of-step bully. Now, we had our reasons. Cuba had their reasons. But nobody could see a reason for us to keep the way we're going, certainly not in this century.
Well, Senator, as you're aware, there are some people around the United States, certainly members of Congress, who don't support this effort at all. They say it's a huge mistake to restore diplomatic relations with a country that confiscated private property, that eliminated their political enemies, imposed a communist dictatorship. How do you respond to those folks?
Well, I think the same arguments were made to President Nixon when he wanted to reopen relations with China. It was the same things when President George H.W. Bush and others wanted to renew relations with Vietnam. And I can give a whole lot of other countries. We fought a war with Germany and Japan and the Vichy France. But obviously, we went ahead with restored relations with them. I'm in no way excusing some of the excesses of the Castro regime any more than I excuse the excesses of the Batista regime before them. But the fact is, we have to look at what makes sense for the United States. And it makes no sense for the most powerful, wealthiest nation on earth to act as though we are threatened by a small island nation like Cuba. We're not. I think we look foolish in the eyes of the rest of the world. I realize there are some who, in this country, who will think they have political gain by saying it's terrible we renew these relations, others because they truly feel that way. But they have the right to their opinion.
So what do you think are some of the key issues that still need to be resolved before the United States opens an embassy in Cuba and Cuban diplomats come to the United States?
Well, we have an interest section there now and have had for years. They have one here in Washington, D.C. I think one of the first things I'd do is make it easier for them to travel around our country and for us, for our diplomats to travel around their country without having to get permission everywhere they go. That's why I met with their foreign minister in New York City, because he could go to the U.N. It would take all kinds of things for him to come to Washington. Now, that's one thing should be done. I would work as quickly as we can to restore regular air service between the United States and Cuba. There are a lot of companies who want to. It'll make it easier to have mail service if we do that. The thing that I would like as much as anything is if some of our internet companies and those could be allowed to operate. Now, this, I think, causes a lot of concern among the Cubans, and I'm sure they would love to control what people say on the internet and all. As a matter of fact, once that starts, they're not going to be able to control it. That's going to be the thing that's going to bring about democracy as much as anything. When people have a free exchange of ideas, and we already have some student exchange now, we should have a lot more.
Do you think there's potential to have additional agricultural exchange programs between Vermont and Cuba?
I think there is. You know, we did this once before with the Holstein Friesian Society did it and getting Holsteins down there. I think Cuba's got, it can be a double-edged sword. They've got to do more to develop what could be some potential agriculture steps in Cuba. They do not do anywhere near enough now. But in the meantime, there are things we can export. One example that's given to us is powdered milk. Most of the milk they get there is reconstituted. It's sent there as powdered milk, and then they add the water. But they get it from New Zealand. Vermont's a lot closer to New Zealand. We could certainly be sending dairy products. They have a shortage of cheese. cheeses there, I told him, let me tell you, some of the best cheeses in the world are made in Vermont. And I'm sure that they would love to have the chance to export to you.
Senator Patrick Leahy is just back from a special congressional delegation visit to Cuba. Senator, many thanks for being on the program today. We're going to follow this story with great interest.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you back in Vermont.
And we have photos of the historic meetings that Leahy described online at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition. That's our program for today. Join us Monday when we take a look at the latest issues surrounding the natural gas pipeline project in Addison and Rutland counties. We'll talk to the new CEO of Vermont Gas, Don Randell, and we'll also speak with an Addison County landowner who opposes the project. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Sengary, with production assistance from Devin Karambulis. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.